Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Whether you're a duck or whether you're a beaver, your fantasy team needs a new receiver. It's Danny and Dusty at lunchtime every day. Maybe you're a tortured fan of Rip City. Danny and Dusty are here to take pity, hoping there's not a center with bad knees on the way. Talking noon till 3, Danny and Dusty on the fan. Yep, I'm singing again, cause they haven't said I can't. Danny and Dusty love the teams the rest of us revile. Raising a Blazers banner would make it all worthwhile. Noon till 3.
An Odyssey station.
Hour number 3 here on Danny and Dusty on a Monday afternoon. And if you're interested in going to a Portland Winterhawks game against the Tri-City Americans on Friday, January 24th, Dirt and Sprague will normally have that opportunity for you. But this week, listen, Monday through Friday on Dirt and Sprague for the code word and text it to 503-864-6326 for your chance to win that word. Today's Hawks, H-A-W-K-S, not X, to 503-864-6326. Again, text HAWKS to 503-864-6326 now to enter for your chance to win a four-pack of tickets to the Portland Winterhawks game against the Tri-City Americans on Friday, January 24th. You can head to 1080thefan.com for complete details.
Heck yeah, go Hawks.
And thank you for listening, whether you listen on 1080 AM, watching along on youtube.com/1080andthefan, or twitch.tv/1080andthefan. We appreciate you, love you. Thank you for hanging out with us on this wonderful, wonderful day. The game of the weekend for me, Dusty, was the Commanders-Buccaneers. This is the game that I was most looking forward to as far as the fun possibilities. And boy, did we get some fun.
We got a doink in. We got a doink in game winner.
I heard and saw the best name for this game, the Washington Post.
Oh, I like that.
Come on, that's pretty good.
I like that.
That's pretty good.
I see what they did. I see
what
they did.
It was a solid doink, too. Like, I hate when you see the replays and they like take the doink sound out. And if anything, jack the doink sound up. I want to hear that ball hit in the post.
Yeah, you do. Mm. It was incredible, though. This was the call on the Commanders Radio Network. Notice they don't acknowledge it at all.
Dean Gonzalez looking to send Washington into the divisional round. Snap good, hold down, kick on its way. It is good! The Cardiac Commanders are the Clutch Commanders! They do it again! We'll see you in Detroit!
And Dean Gonzalez kicks in the door and kicks us into the second round of the playoffs!
I love that. London Fletcher right there. That's great.
I mean, we were just in that press box a couple weeks ago. How can you, like, you're looking at the posts. Like, how can you not see it?
We were not there. That was in Tampa.
Oh, that's right. It was in Tampa.
In the 50-yard line is where their radio broadcasts are. I don't understand. You heard it. It was like, boom.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It was a loud
doink. How do you
not
hear it? How do you not even hear it? They don't acknowledge the fact Zane Gonzalez banked that thing in and crushed the souls of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Also, Zane Gonzalez, the OCD stuff.
Oh, yeah, fixing his hair before?
He's talked about it. No, he has OCD.
Oh, really?
He's been open and discussing it. That's him struggling and battling it. There's a clip of him, like, continually taking his cleat on and off, on and off, on and off until his sock is just right. Like, it's something that he battles.
Oh, yeah, I was reading about it that he had talked about it with somebody in the Charlotte area when he was with the Panthers.
Yeah, and it's a real thing, that which is kind of insane to think about. Like, how does he conquer kicking the ball? Like, if the snap isn't perfect or if the hold isn't, like, you know what I mean? Like, that feels like the one place where OCD could not work in any way at all. And yet he gets up there, steps up, and buries that kick and pushes them damn Manders.
That's crazy. I like the Cardiac Commanders.
Oh, yeah.
I like that because their last four wins have been one possession games. They've
come down
to the wire, and then they go into the playoffs, and you're sitting there going, can they do it again? Yup. And look, that game was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a fun football game all the way around because you saw two teams that were evenly matched, and home field advantage obviously worked in Tampa's favor because they won their division at 10-7. The 12-5 Commanders is the only road team to go in and upset somebody this week or this week in wild card round. The game was fun because you had big plays made by each team. And what it came down to was the critical mistake. And the critical mistake was Baker Mayfield on a jet sweep to Jalen McMillan not being able to get the ball all the way in. And that fumble, right, the only turnover of the game, it goes Washington's way, and that dictated the outcome of the game. I thought Tampa played a good enough game to win,
yes,
but it comes down to can you make the stops when they matter? And look, Washington made a huge one right there. No fault, or really nothing that they did except for right in right place, right time. Bobby Wagner, familiar name coming up huge in playoff games, hops on that ball, and it was game over. That was an exciting game. It was a fun game. I thought Jaden Daniels took another step forward, and that guy is damn ice water running through his veins. He is so fun.
Unbelievable.
So damn fun.
This game, again, time of possession, Commanders dominating that stat. Baker Mayfield was 15 of 18.
Yep.
15 of 18, man. Like, he had 185 yards, not a big number, but you're talking about 10 yards per drop back. That, if you're doing that, that's the kind of you expect a bigger performance. They run the ball for, you know, 25 times for 100 yards. But you look at the Commanders up and down, 8 of 15 on third downs. They keep, you know, they're plus 10 minutes in the time of possession. And the negative plays, for the most part, were limited other than penalties. There's 12 penalties between both teams.
That is where it really hurt Tampa.
Yes.
Like, they kept shooting themselves in the foot penalty-wise, and that led to the numbers being a little bit wonky for Baker Mayfield because of the fact that they were behind the sticks and in just bad situations because of penalties. And you can't have that, and they kept running into it time and time again. They're drive killers, man.
Mm-hmm.
When you're not getting behind the sticks because of sacks, only two sacks combined
total
for both teams, but for a total of 2 yards lost on those sacks. Because Baker Mayfield on his, he fought every, I think first contact was like 6 or 8 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and it was only a 2 yard loss. Jane Daniels sack went for no loss. He just got right back to the line of scrimmage. Like, they weren't getting behind the sticks there, but penalties were a killer for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, including giving out extra opportunities and just that time of possession. That's equal if the penalties aren't there, because it wasn't like it just kept drives alive and allowed them to hold on to the football.
I want to talk about more about Jaden Daniels, but we're up against it. It just, there can be a real conversation for Jaden Daniels having the best rookie year we've ever seen from a quarterback. Like, that's a real thing we can talk about. Like, I did not think that was a possibility this year.
I didn't think so either, but, I mean, we definitely can have those conversations. I mean, Big Ben's rookie year, pretty good.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Not, I mean, Jaden Daniels isn't going to do what Big Ben did.
Probably not.
No.
Probably not going to the Super Bowl.
No.
But, Just a fun game.
It was statistically, and what Jaden Daniels is doing and kind of elevating everybody on this team, it is outstanding, because that's not like what Big Ben was asked to do.
No.
He was asked to go in and manage the pieces that they already had together, which was a really damn good team. What Jaden Daniels has been asked to do is elevate a team, and he's come up with big plays to win games at the end of the season, which 5 games in a row, in one of them being a playoff game. Mm-hmm. And it all changed when the Chicago Bears decided to celebrate prior to the game or play actually even happening.
Oops. That'll kill you. All right, coming up next, we've talked about the playoffs. What about one of the teams that wasn't in the playoffs as it pertains to the Dallas Cowboys? Is anybody celebrating now that they've made a decision about their coach going forward? Danny and Dusty, Tenney the Fan. after telling the Chicago Bears, no, they can't interview their coach. The Dallas Cowboys and Mike McCarthy have decided to part ways, and Mike McCarthy is a free agent coach and now out in the market 2 weeks later than everybody else.
Boy, even for the Dallas Cowboys, this is pretty dysfunctional, what's happening with Mike McCarthy, because of the fact that one of two things is going to be a disaster here, and both of them are not good for the Cowboys. One, which is there is reporting that the Cowboys and Mike McCarthy were trying to work towards a contract extension, and for whatever reason, Jerry Jones thought, this is our guy, but not at that price. We don't want to pay him. Okay? That is number one, where you let a coach go that you believe is the guy that you want to coach your team because you're not willing to pay him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Or the length of the deal was too long for Jerry, so he was just like, nope, not going to be my coach at all. The other thing in this is you also had a coach that you didn't have intentions on keeping, which there is that report that's out there now, and you just said, no, you can't go and interview somewhere else because we don't want you, but we don't want anybody else to have you.
Yeah.
Neither one of those is a good look for the Cowboys right now. And those are really the only options of how this thing played out.
Yeah, that are just complete and total ineptitude, which, chalking up to the Cowboys, wouldn't be the first time we'd seen that.
No, not one bit. That now it's, you know, Mike McCarthy should be the coach of the Chicago Bears. No, he shouldn't.
No, he shouldn't.
That would be the worst thing developmentally for Caleb Williams. Is Mike McCarthy a good coach? Yeah. But one thing that has always been the criticism about his offense in Dallas is that it is now antiquated in the world of the NFL. And you do not want to hand that over to your second-year quarterback who really needs an offensive-minded coach. And the thing about the dysfunction going on in Chicago right now, they're not going to get the top-end coach because it doesn't seem like the high-end candidates want that Chicago job.
Because they're seeing what's going on there. And I don't think Mike McCarthy is the one to come in and clean that mess up.
No.
That's just like, which is weird because you don't see this too often. There's some of them in the league, like Sean McVay, where you have someone who's an offensive-minded coach, but also a culture setter. And I think those are few and far between. Like, I love a guy like Ben Johnson, and, the jury's out because he hasn't been a head coach. Is he that kind of coach? Maybe, but it doesn't sound like he wants that job.
And that was a job that he was interested in last year, and they never fired Matt Eberflus.
Because they were dumb.
But there also is the idea that Ben Johnson is just going to come in and he's going to be just as effective and just as great of a play caller without the immense amount of talent that they have in Detroit. That's a bit of a fallacy too, because he has one of the best offensive lines in football. That gets you a long way.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have that in Chicago. Chicago is in a tough spot. But also, you look at Dallas. Who's going to want the Dallas job now? You don't have Mike McCarthy. What you do have, though, is Dak Prescott with salary cap hits of $90 million, $68 million, and $61 million over the next 3 years, and a no-trade clause. You only have one receiver that you can rely on. Your offensive line needs to be rebuilt. And you have a meddling owner.
And Micah Parsons is not under contract. Good luck.
Do you want that job?
Pete Carroll might.
You know, Mike McCarthy now, if we're talking about McCarthy, New Orleans apparently has interest in that. Maybe he goes there. Pete Carroll may be an interesting one for Dallas.
Stopgap.
But yeah, you're in a stopgap, but that also lines up with you getting out of the Dak Prescott contract eventually.
The one that the four-letter network is pumping right now is Deion. Deion Sanders to Dallas.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead and hire Deion, draft his kid, which I cringe to think of what you're going to have to give up to trade to get high enough.
Yeah.
To get to the top of the draft to draft Shador.
What is it, like a sign and trade with Micah?
And you would have to deal Dak Prescott probably because you can't bring Dak Prescott or Shador in and have Dak Prescott on there, but Dak has a no trade clause. So what team at the top of the draft is Dak going to want to go to? Like that would make zero sense.
I mean, I'd like to see it just because it would be incredibly dysfunctional.
It absolutely would. It would be so dysfunctional, but right on par. If you're looking, Jimmy Shapiro gave us our updated odds. Ben Johnson is now odds-on favorite to get the Bears job.
Oh.
Minus 125. Mike McCarthy, 2-1. Cliff Kingsbury, 7-1. That's a big change from last week. Kellen Moore, the offensive coordinator for the Eagles, he is the odds-on favorite for the Cowboys job, plus 250. Behind him, Dion at 3-1, Cliff Kingsbury 5-1, Joe Brady at 7-1. Jags is Liam Cohen still at minus 110. Ben Johnson was the favorite for that job last week. He's now at plus 110. And Raiders, you've had, oh, Ben Johnson, 3-2 odds for the Raiders, plus 150. Then Dion at 2-1, which Vic Taffer has already come out and said they don't want him. And then Pete Carroll, 5-1.
I'm so conflicted on that one. I'm so conflicted on that because I know it's a stopgap.
Outside of old Ben Johnson, the next offensive coach on this list, Cliff Kingsbury, 8-1 for your Raiders.
I just don't think Cliff's a good head coach. I think he's a phenomenal coordinator.
I think he is not. Yeah.
And he doesn't have a quarterback to work with. Like, that's the thing. It's just like, with Ben Johnson, maybe he's a guy that can be a head coach too. That's what you talk yourself into, at least.
Yeah, maybe.
But with Cliff, you know that right now he's not.
You know who was firing shots this morning?
Mm.
You saw Mike Vrabel was hired as the Patriots head coach.
Oh, no way.
That's a slippery slope there. Now, this is like my fear of, I think Vrabel is a very good head coach, but now you're just getting in the, hey,
the Patriot way.
We're just going to get Patriot guys and guys who know how to win as Patriots, which that could backfire tremendously. When Vrabel was hired today, this was Rex Ryan's response on postseason countdown.
Hey, man, I mean, hopefully I get to kick this guy's ass twice a year. I don't know what to tell him
about. Just kidding.
Them Jets, huh?
So I'm just kidding, buddy.
maybe your team.
Yeah, but anyway, my team, yes, but not me personally.
Connor Hughes, who covers the New York Jets for SNY, he went on our sister station WFAN in New York and said that Rex Ryan is not going to be the head coach of the Jets. Ooh. So after dropping that on postseason countdown, Connor Hughes goes, no, he won't be the job. They're not gonna bring him back for another run. That's a tough look for old Rexy saying I can't wait to kick his ass twice a year.
my former team, I mean. My former team. Former team. You know, on the Patriot Way note, Aaron Glenn did say he didn't want to interview with the Patriots. So there's that too.
Yeah.
So it's not all just the Patriot guys.
That want that job.
Yes.
Him not wanting that job. After Gerard Mayo gets 1 year, no. I wouldn't want it either.
Especially as a first-time head coach where Vrabel maybe is a little bit more ground to stand on.
Established head coach, that will matter.
Yeah.
And now Aaron Glenn, he was at the top of a lot of these, you know, betting odds.
Mm-hmm.
He's not anymore. We're really near the top or at the top of any of them.
I don't think it's necessarily his fault, not without, you know, not being in the room while he's interviewing. I think assistant coaches, and we talked about this last year, I think assistant coaches are getting smarter.
As
about not taking jobs.
It's got to be a good fit. It's got to go to the
and
right
and be
place.
Like, no, I'm good.
Yep.
I'm good.
Right now, if you look at his odds, he's 40-1 for the Cowboys job, 12-1 for the Raiders job, which is about 7th or 8th, because it doesn't seem like anybody has a good idea of where they want to go. And then 9-1 odds for the Bears, which is 5th.
Yeah, I don't honestly, as insane as it sounds, I think the best fit for him is the Cowboys.
Might be. Got a good defense.
Yeah.
Yep, you just got to nail your offensive coordinator hire. But that's the hard part with Jerry Jones, is that you're going to hire Jerry's guy.
He's going to nail the offensive coordinator.
Brutal.
Yeesh. All right. Coming up next, there's been some news about Bo Nix and the things that he played with or had to deal with down the stretch of the season. But first, here's the Big Kahuna on the Sports Center Update.
Hamburgers, the cornerstone of any nutritious breakfast.
Well, the Broncos season is over, but there's been some news around quarterback Bo Nix and what he was dealing with this season. The audio we have here, courtesy of KOA in Denver.
Well, it was a long 18, 19-week season, but, you know, fortunately, you know, God was good to me this year. He allowed me to stay upright and You know, I was healthy, got to play each and every game. Obviously, we all play with some bruises and some, you know, some cuts and scrapes. But the Vegas week was just, you know, I had a little, you know, transverse process fracture in my back. But that week got treatment and kind of made it through to that week. Monday Night Football, it was a stretch that we were all kind of banged up. And, you know, I wasn't going to miss the first Monday night game. So I got treatment on it, and then we were fortunate to have an off week that next week. And, you know, kind of went away after that. But for that moment, it was, you know, annoying, but we all play with annoying.
It was the Raiders game at the Raiders?
Yeah, yeah. Got, you know, twisted up a little bit. Had three process fractures, but a lot of guys play with a lot of those kind of things.
Okay.
For those that don't know when that game was played, the Raiders game was played on November 24th. So that means Bo Nix played seven games with a broken back. Three transverse process fractures, which I'm not sure what that is. Sounds like it hurts. Bet it does hurt. Playing with a back injury, never fun. But it's something that he did.
Back is broken.
So I broke my back spinal.
The transverse process fracture, TPF, is a break in the wing-like bony extension on the side of the vertebra. So you've got your main vertebra, and you've got those, like, little wings that hang off the edge.
So three of them?
Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
Doctor said I need a bacchiotomy.
That's right. That's right. Half-Baked, great movie.
God, it's a great movie. Still holds up.
That is that's a good season for Bo Nix, rookie year all the way through. And a lot of these guys, this is like one of the things about football. And like he says it pretty nonchalantly at the end, like a lot of guys play with injuries like this. It is wild to hear, like, once a team season is over, how many guys are injured in injuries that you sit there and you're like, yep, that sounds serious. We know of like guys like N'Kobe Dean, and that's going to be a big injury moving forward for Philly. You have a patellar tear, and that's going to be 8 to 10 month recovery on that one, if he's lucky. We know about the Aiden Hutchinson when you see his ankle snap, but
Curtis Rourke playing with his ACL torn for Indiana.
How many of these guys actually play throughout the entire season? You don't really know much about what is going on with them until the end of the season, and you're like, oh, so three fractures in your back. All right, that sounds normal. Sounds like something everybody works
through. There was a defensive lineman this weekend. I can't remember who it was. Left the game with clearly a pretty severely injured ankle. Got rolled up on. And they spatted the living bejesus out of his foot.
Well, don't think that's the only thing they gave him.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, he's running.
Give him that needle.
Sideline reporter sitting there saying, you can see him wincing with every step as he's trying this out. And I'm like, oh, yeah, no, he's... they're going to go give him the tee shot at halftime because he's trying to keep this thing moving. But yeah, I keep going back to the Kelce documentary of when he's in between games and he's got acupuncture needles in his all over his ankle and foot. And he's walking around the house. I think it's his wife who's like, I don't think you're supposed to be doing that.
I think it was everybody watching that going, you're not supposed to
do that. You're not supposed to move around those needles. But he's just like, you see his ankle and it's just... mangled. It's when you see players in the NFL and NBA on injury reports, like they're injured. There's a difference between hurt and injured, and that's the thing. Is like what guys play through. I will never forget what Josh Hart tried to play through when he was here. His ankle was the size of a freaking cantaloupe, and that's not an over exaggeration. It was that big, and he's like, no, I can go. And the medical staff like looked around like, no, you're not playing on this, dude. Like, you could have drained like a half gallon of fluid from it, but like they're just wired different, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's pretty crazy. That is crazy to think that Bo Nix, November 24th in Vegas, transverse process fractures TPF of his back. And then he went on to play six games after that, he injured it in that game, so that would be his seventh. So, holy crap.
Tough place to be. But hey, good on him. Also, I love that Bo still sounds like he's from Auburn.
Oh, he is. I mean, he's from Alabama.
I know, but I love, like, because you look at him and you don't think that voice is going to come out of him. Mm-mm. But then it does, and you're like, oh, there he is.
There he is.
I like it. All right, coming up next, we had 5 straight days of football, and we've hit nothing but the NFL. Texas and Ohio State played a hell of a football game, and we'll get to that next year on Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan.
It's time for a Blazers report on the Fan. The inside story on the Portland Trail Blazers, brought to you by Aztec Willie's Taqueria.
Portland Trail Blazers fell to the Miami Heat 119-98 over the weekend. They're now 13-25 on the season. They have the 6th worst record in the NBA. There's something that I put out the other day as far as the Blazers and the games that they've lost. They have now lost 15 games by double figures. 15. They have won a total of 13 games. The real tanking is going to start here relatively soon. Notes from practice today, Chauncey Billups stated that Robert Williams and DeAndre Ayton went through practice and seems like he looks like he's going to be fine. Robert Williams is still sick. Jeremy Grant is close to making a return. I know his jaw, neck area has been the bigger concern as opposed to the actual contusion. They will take on the Brooklyn Nets tomorrow in what will be, I'm sure, a tankathon for the ages. This Trailblazers report on the Fan is brought to you by Aztec Willie's Taqueria, the best place to go before and after games or any event. Check them out on the corner of Southeast 15 and Broadway at AztecWillies.com. Game 2 of our college football semifinal feature, the Ohio State Buckeyes taking on the Texas Longhorns, and 95% of the game delivered.
What a fun game. I thought 100% of the game delivered. I thought that was an awesome football game. And that was where you had two heavyweights trading blows back and forth. That's what we thought the Rose Bowl was going to look like. Mm-hmm. But Texas did an incredible job of taking a page out of, really, it was what Michigan did, which was, we are going to make sure that there's one guy who is not going to beat us. And it is not going to be Jeremiah Smith.
It's going to be everybody else. One catch, 3 yards. Jeremiah Smith, you didn't hear his name. He was not a factor in the game. Carnell Tate was obviously featured more. Emeka Egbuka, Travion Henderson, everybody else. They all had their moments. They all had their time to shine or time in the sun. And it ended with not anybody on offense, but the defense and Jack Sawyer with the strip sack sealing that game.
And it damn near worked for Texas. But that Ohio State defense, they are not getting enough credit for how good they are. And Jeremiah Smith is getting all the flowers, and rightfully so, with how good he's been. Will Howard is getting flowers, and rightfully so, for how good he has been. Chip Kelly's been in his bag and calling a great game and masking a lot of big injuries on that offensive line. But that defense is nasty, mm-hmm. and they are so good, so talented from top to bottom. It's been really fun to watch that Ohio State defense come together. They are going to rule Notre Dame. And they're 8-point favorites right now.
Which is insane to me that it's only 8. It is insane to me that it's only 8.
I don't know how Notre Dame's going to score.
No, I don't either. This Texas team, you can say Sark and Ewers and their faults and blah, blah, blah. Number one, that Texas defense is about that life.
Mm-hmm.
Neither team could run the ball to save their life. Mm-hmm. And there are 2 plays that decided this game. And they came, the Jack Sawyer strip sack and the screenplay to Travion Henderson. Those 2 plays would separate this game. Otherwise, this game was a standstill.
Such a good call, especially at the end of the half, too. And you saw exactly how much that meant.
Oh, God.
I mean, it got everybody going one way, the eye candy, and then whoop.
Texas's entire secondary bailed out. There wasn't anybody within 15 yards of Henderson when he got the ball.
Yep. And that 14-7 lead, it was like, okay, you know, Texas is still in this. Let's see what they can do. Then they have Will Howard throws a pick to start the second half, and you're like, oh boy.
This is getting interesting.
Oh boy. No. Nope. Nope.
Drive stalls out.
That defense of Ohio State continued to just show its teeth over and over and over again. And that scoop and score for a touchdown, look, you get down on the 1 yard line, I was like, golly, we're going to go to overtime.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to overtime. That's in this
100%
game.
What I thought.
You can't run against them. And that, this is the thing with Notre Dame being as one dimensional as they are, in the corners on the outside being as good as they are for Ohio State. Now you have Lathan Ransom and Caleb Downs are going to be able to play closer to the box, and Phil Lanes and Riley Leonard and Jeremiah Love are going to be the guys that are going to have to carry that load for the Notre Dame offense. It's going to be really tough for them to score. And here's the thing, though. Their offensive line also banged up at Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
That's why 8 points does not seem like it is nearly enough. But Notre Dame's defense is really good. And if they can eliminate Jeremiah Smith mm-hmm. the way that Texas did, the way that Michigan
and
did.
And make them go down the field.
That is going to keep the game tighter. But I just don't see it. That Ohio State team looks the part. I thought they were going to run away with that game against Texas mm-hmm. at times. But I give Texas a ton of credit. They played so well on both sides of the football until the end.
It was two plays.
It's the end of the game.
It's the end of the first half with the screenplay, and it's the scoop and score. I mean, it's
dang.
It's for Sark. It's he's the new Ryan Day in the sense of coach that's really really good,
yep.
has really high end talent, but isn't getting it done in the biggest moments. And Ryan Day is beating the allegations now. Second time I've used that today. And it was when I was talking about a player getting their foot taped up, it was JT. It was Tui Malau. He went to the sideline, and I remember him having we were talking about pre-show about Jordan's. It was him, and he came back out there and was still effective. Because he had an offensive lineman roll up on his ankle, and it was bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, ooh, I don't know if he's coming back in, and yet here he is.
National title coming down to Notre Dame and Ohio State.
You could double that line, and I might still take Ohio State.
Really?
Yeah. I think
defense good.
I get it, but we'll see. I just don't think they can score anything.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. I don't know how they're going to move the ball.
Like, it's really hard for me to see how Ohio State scores in that game.
Oh, man. We got a Monday Night Football tonight.
We do.
We got Rams and Vikings in Arizona. Do you hear what Sean McVay opted for?
Hmm.
He opted for the visitor's locker room tonight.
Oh.
Because it's comfortable for them. They experience it one time every year.
They already know
exactly where they need to go.
It's just a little bit more familiarity than otherwise.
Yeah, if this was like a college game, you'd say you're taking the home one because you're basically in like a changing closet.
Yeah.
But in the new NFL stadiums like State Farm Field, which weird move to put it in State Farm Field after everything that's going on in LA with State Farm. But those visitors' locker rooms, all of the new stadiums have to have a certain
level. They have to rise to a certain level.
Medical facilities and meeting rooms for coaches and stuff. So they're all really nice.
Mm-hmm.
So they just said, you know what? We're going to stick to what we're used to. We're going to go in the visitors' locker room. Minnesota, you can have the home one.
It's not like Moda Center where it's a shoe closet.
No. College visiting locker rooms are the worst, though. Like, they will literally put you in storage containers.
Especially up at the old... You know, the old stadiums, the really old stadiums.
Yeah.
You go to Memorial in LA or
all of
the Big Ten schools. Yeah. It's just like, oh, buddy. It's tough.
Yeah. It's not great.
I will say, Climate Pledge up in Seattle, beautiful, beautiful locker rooms for everybody.
Oh, hey, look at that.
So, you know.
Hey, it's good to know.
It's good. It's nice to have the amenities.
Sure is, Bob.
You're not getting those University of Arizona locker rooms, though.
I have no idea what you mean by that.
The football team, their locker room. Have you seen theirs? They did the whole redo with Fish.
No.
It might be one of the starker contrasts in college football, because I think it actually is a storage unit for one and then a better than NFL locker room in the other.
Well, yeah, that's what colleges do. They literally will put you in the most narrow, awful places, except for the Rose Bowl, because visitors' locker room in the Rose Bowl has to be nice Rose Bowl game. It's actually the exact same as the home locker room for UCLA. Yeah,
you love to see.
It's crazy. All right, up next, you got 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. Prime time with Isaac and Souk. Have a great Monday, everybody. We'll see you Tuesday, noon to 3, right here on The Fan.
Bye.